The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters. I'm Frank Holland. Here is your 5 at 5. We begin with investors looking to close out a wild week with the S&P 500 at an all-time high. And stocks, they're set to do something for the first time since the 1960s. Futures right now, they are higher. Fed Chairman Jay Powell not mincing words in his second day of Capitol Hill testimony, sharing his clear vision for when the Fed will begin its easing cycle. Also sharing a clear vision, President Biden in his third State of the Union last night laying out his case for a second term and the key economic achievements from the past 3 years. We have the takeaway for investors. Plus, the Tesla tumble continues as a new stock takes its place in the global rankings of the most valuable companies. And then later, getting set for the final jobs report before the Fed's next policy decision, the key demographic driving at least part of the stronger-than-expected hiring trends. It is Friday, March the 8th, 2024, International Women's Day. And you're watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good Friday morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to get you ready for the trading day ahead. We kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures with the S&P coming off another record close. Taking a look at futures, you can see green across the board. Looks like the Dow would open up about 20 points higher right now. It's the NASDAQ really moving higher right now, up over a third of a percent in the pre-market. Checking the pre-market, we are looking at the gainers on the S&P 500 after yesterday's record close. Take a look. A very big concentration, as you can see, on tech. NVIDIA right here at the top, up 3% in the pre-market. Intel, Micron, two other chip makers in this list. Adobe down here as well. In second place, Alexandria Real Estate shares up almost 3%. Also this morning, we're seeing, like I said, 81 S&P 500 stocks are trading at 52-week or all-time highs. And those highs, they're really broad-based across industrials, tech, materials, and more. And this morning, we're checking the bond market with yields at their lowest level in about 3 weeks. Take a look. The benchmark right now, you see at 4.07. It's fallen about 15 basis points from the start of just this week. Similar story for the long bond, often seen as a read on inflation expectations. And last but certainly not least, we got to go to precious metals. That's gold. It's continuing its record-breaking rally. Right now, gold trading at $21.75 an ounce, up almost a half a percent. You see the big run-up here. This is since 1973, this chart, just to clarify, but huge run-up. Since December the 30th of 1973, gold is up over 1,700%. Big run-up for gold there over that time period. Okay, that's your morning money set up now. We're going to turn our attention back to the markets. The S&P and the NASDAQ hitting a fresh all-time high yesterday. Investors, they're just growing more optimistic about the prospect of rate cuts this summer. As Jay Powell says, the Fed is just not far from a move, and the ECB strikes a dovish tone. The S&P is up 1% this week. If it holds these gains, it will have posted gains in 17 of the past 19 weeks. That's the first time that has happened since 1964. The focus turns today to the monthly jobs report. Investors will look into those numbers for insight into when we could see a rate cut. Let's now bring in Robert Teeter, head of investment policy and strategy at Silvercrest Asset Management. Robert, good morning. Great to have you here.
Great to see you again, Frank.
All right, so S&P hitting a high, NASDAQ hitting a high, but you're focused on valuation, and it's interesting. You actually focused on trailing 12 months valuation for the S&P right now coming in at 23 times. You said that number, that means that we have to have a cut. Why?
Well, we've seen it in treasuries. As you pointed out, the yields have been coming down a bit in the past few weeks as we've had this rally going on and broadening out. Investors are counting on those cuts. So right now, expectations are for a Fed cut in June. I think we'll get that. But that's required to keep this rally going. The longer that the Fed waits to cut rates, the more pressure it puts on the economy, the more pressure it puts on valuation. So we're really dependent upon that rate cut taking place in the summer to keep this rally going.
Okay, so you're saying we're very dependent on the cut happening in this summer. It keeps getting pushed out further and further because there was a time that we thought it was going to be March. Now people are looking more towards June. Does it matter how deep the cut is or just the fact that we get a cut?
I think the fact that we get underway, that gives you visibility into next year. So when you look at a year ahead or so for expectations on where Fed funds will be, I'm about 100 basis points lower. But the further we move into the future, and once that rate cut cycle is underway, investors can look further ahead, project more rate cuts out into the future, and get more comfortable in valuation. So I think we need that rate easing to get underway to keep the rally going.
All right. Last night, President Biden obviously had the State of the Union address. One thing he was focusing on was the strength of the economy, low unemployment. You're looking at an economic number. It's actually a real-time number from the Atlanta Fed, the GDP Now number. The most recent read, it actually came in right before the State of the Union address. It was scheduled, so it wasn't like they were tied together. But it came in at 2.5% growth for Q1 of 2024. In your mind, what does that mean for the economy? What does that mean for market sentiment?
That's a really positive signal, and we'll get more indication on that with the payrolls number later this morning. But that's where the strength has been coming from. Adding jobs, consumers have more income, broadens out the spending in the economy, and the economy has been much more resilient than people have predicted, mainly on the basis of jobs continuing to grow. That level of economic growth, 2.5%, is really positive for earnings. That puts you in a world of high single-digit earnings gains historically with that type of GDP growth. So that continuation of job gains is really important for the economy and earnings here.
All right, Rob, I'm going to give you first crack at a question I'm going to ask a number of our guests. We have the jobs report coming up later today. Are we back in a situation where good news is bad news? If this potentially comes in hotter than expected, does that give the market concern about that June rate cut that you're seeing?
I don't think it will. There is a small faction, it seems to be forming in the Fed, of pointing to needing to see a little bit of economic weakness. But I think Powell controls the consensus. And as we've heard him say, he's getting ready to cut on the basis of not being overly restrictive. And so I don't think they'll be too scared by a strong economy as it relates to strong jobs. That's what they want to see, strong jobs, inflation coming down.
All right, Robert Teeter, great to see you as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank.
All right, turn our attention now to Washington, D.C. President Biden vowing to raise taxes on the wealthy and on large companies, announcing his plans in the State of the Union address to hike corporate minimum taxes and cut deductions for executive pay. President Biden also proposing a new tax credit to help Americans buy a first home or trade up to a larger one. The measures will be part of the president's budget plan that aims to lower the deficit by $3 trillion over 10 years.
I'm not anti-corporation, but I grew up in a home where trickle-down economics didn't put much on my dad's kitchen table. That's why I determined to turn things around so middle class does well. When they do well, the poor are way up and the wealthy still do very well.
All right, let's talk much more about the big takeaways from last night's speech. Courtney Gelman is the Managing Director of Policy Research at Strategic Securities. Courtney, good morning. It's great to have you here on the day after the State of the Union.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
All right, so I read your notes, Courtney. You believe the style in which the president delivered the State of the Union address was very substantial for investors. In fact, it may have been even more important than what he had to say. How do you believe investors will view the president's performance?
Yeah, we believe, you know, there might have been some proposals that President Biden discussed last night that might have surprised investors. But the more important thing was the delivery of the speech. And we do think that it probably provided some buoyancy to his candidacy. And we think it's probably going to be incrementally better for Biden levered stocks overall, regardless of really the substance of what he said last night.
All right. You know quite a bit about Biden levered stocks. You actually run two different portfolios. So one's a Republican policy focused portfolio, and then you have a Democrat policy focused portfolio. On the Democrat side, you have infrastructure, green energy, tech, and also cannabis. But currently the Republican portfolio is outperforming the Democratic one. So do you see this leading to some type of shift in where investors are putting their money? I mean, are investors going to put more money in infrastructure because of this speech? Cannabis, is that something that you expect to see a bit of a rally in?
Yeah, so year to date, we've seen a narrow outperformance from our Republican portfolio against our Democratic portfolio. I should say, though, overall, the portfolios aren't really telling us too much right now. It really does look like a 50-50 race when we run them against each other. We attribute that to just investors having a hard time pricing in this election because of the issues with both candidates, age, criminal cases, unfavorability. But we do think, again, given Biden's performance last night, there probably are some from investors more optimism about his candidacy and his ability to win election in November. So we do think overall, there's probably going to be a little bit of a boost to those Biden levered companies. But we see, you know, regardless, going into any election, we see stocks levered to the candidate kind of moving. We saw that in the midterms with green energy. I would expect green energy to really move with investors kind of with how they're thinking Biden's going to do going into the election. So we expect energy, cannabis, all of those names are going to move over the next couple of months.
Yeah, I'm looking at the MSOS ETF. That's the U.S. cannabis ETF, up 3% in the pre-market. Pretty volatile ETF, yep. Just to be fair. Courtney Gelman, we really appreciate your insight. Long way to go before November. We'll have to have you back to talk more about those portfolios. Have a good day.
Thank you.
All right, we got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, the stock taking Tesla's place on the list of the world's most valuable public companies as Elon Musk's his fall from grace. It just seems to continue. Plus, the stocks that rallied last year, the Goldman Sachs, thanks, will still have major upside ahead. And then later, we have your big money movers and why the digital pen appears to be mightier than the sword. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We have a major market flash from Japan this morning. Reuters is reporting the Bank of Japan is considering ending its negative rate campaign as soon as its next policy decision on March the 28th. That move, according to the report, is dependent on the outcome of wage negotiations that are taking place over the next week. Sticking with the overseas action, let's now see how Europe is shaping up as its trading day gets underway. Our Arabelle Gumede is live in our London newsroom with much more on the early action. Arabelle, I'm going to let you get to the market report, but you didn't tell me we're wearing black today. You're supposed to tell me.
Frank, it's an every Friday thing. How about we do that, right? So I do this look every Friday, so just know that if we're doing market reports on a Friday, you're definitely going to find me in it, right? But nonetheless, let's get into this market picture very quickly. Are you looking for some black? Well, we're in the black for a lot of these markets then across Europe then. It's only really the FTSE 100 and the DAX that are actually in negative territory. HelloFresh being a big decliner then when it comes to that German market. It's around 40% weak on the back of a profit guidance sort of dip there that you are seeing. So it's a big fall out on that front then. But overall, it's a mixed picture. The European Central Bank yesterday decided to keep interest rates unchanged, but actually downgraded its inflation forecast then for 2024, which was good news for those that have been looking at that inflation print to see when the next cut in interest rates or a cut in interest rates would actually come from the ECB. It looks like June is the date because the market has priced in that quite significantly. But if we stay on the equities front then, specifically on the sectors, this is what's pretty much moving things along then. And you'll take a look at the retail space then, again on the back of that HelloFresh story. On the other side, you have financial services managing to move a little bit higher. But if one takes a look at that healthcare stock, that is down, and it is just marginally, and it is on the back of Novo Nordisk. They're pulling back in pre-market trade. That's particularly after surpassing Tesla in market cap on positive early trial data. Specifically, again, it is on that Nordic trading picture that you're seeing Novo Nordisk actually beat out Tesla, not necessarily on the U.S. listing then. So that is quite significant then as well in this market movement trade. Happy Friday to you, Frank.
Arabelle, thank you very much. Arabelle Gumede live in our London newsroom. All right, we're going to go to our big money movers now. We're going to start with Costco. Those shares are under pressure this morning. The big box retailer missing holiday revenue expectations despite growth in sales and e-commerce. Management says customers, they just spent more time on their shopping trips during the quarter. They add categories like sporting goods and gardening will have lower prices due to falling freight and commodity costs. Shares of Costco down more than 4%. MongoDB also sinking, guidance coming in lighter than expected thanks to weak growth prospects for cloud computing. The company says it will continue to invest in the development of its key products and go-to-market initiatives. Those shares down more than 8%. And DocuSign popping after blowing past earnings and revenue estimates. The company also offering strong guidance for the current quarter, driven by strength in both enterprise and small business customers. DocuSign says IT spending is improving and that strong billings figures reflect faster than expected deals. Those shares up almost 10%. All right, speaking of our big money movers, our colleagues over at CNBC Pro, they're highlighting stocks that may have more room to run this year after notching solid gains in 2023. Looking at a recent Goldman Sachs analyst note, as well as a number of other conviction lists, they found the likes of Ally Financial, Zegna, Shell, and Tesco. They all have more than 30% upside potential. First Solar, meanwhile, could surge 67% this year. For more and other stories like this, just head over to CNBC.com/pro. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, a key beneficiary of the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure law. Shares of this stock are up more than 86% since President Biden took office. We speak with the company's CEO next, and we're going to tell you, or he's going to tell you, why he believes there's plenty more room for this stock to run. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We're watching shares of Wesco this morning. The stock closing more than 3% higher yesterday on an upgrade from Oppenheimer. This follows Wesco's update to full-year guidance, forecasting 1% to 4% growth with the mid-range above street estimates. Wesco divides revenue into three segments. The largest supplies electrical components for businesses. The other segments provide security hardware, broadband and fiber optic equipment, as well as supply chain solutions. Joining me now to discuss his business and the outlook for infrastructure, construction, and supply chain, John Engel, Wesco International Chairman, President, and CEO. John, good morning. Great to have you here.
Morning, Frank. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So you're having a bit of a busy week. I'm glad you fit us in. You had the upgrade from Oppenheimer yesterday. Earlier in the week at an investor conference, you released updated full-year guidance. And the start this week, you announced your inaugural common stock dividend, that dividend just under 38 cents a share. What are you seeing in your business? It seems like you have a lot of confidence going forward.
Well, we're a leading Fortune 200 B2B distribution and supply chain management company. We've had a great run over the last 3 years. As you mentioned, three strong businesses. Our future outlook and current momentum is fueled by infrastructure investments, all the public sector investments, along with a series of very strong secular growth trends. AI-driven data centers, electrification, utility investment in terms of new generation and grid modernization efforts, as well as nearshoring and reshoring to the U.S. Through the pandemic, global supply chains have been impacted dramatically, and we see a shift of nearshoring, reshoring of supply chains back to the U.S., which bodes well for the U.S. market.
So a lot of big trends that you see as tailwinds for your business. Now, you mentioned some of the public investment in infrastructure. I want to play a soundbite for you from President Biden's State of the Union address. I want to get your reaction to what he had to say.
My policies have attracted $650 billion in private sector investment in clean energy, advanced manufacturing, creating tens of thousands of jobs here in America. Thanks to our bipartisan infrastructure law, 46,000 new projects have been announced all across your communities.
All right, so President Biden touting some of the investments in infrastructure through his policy, also some private investments as well. He highlighted the CHIPS Act. What does that mean for your business? And give us a sense in real time, where are you seeing the benefits? Where are you seeing more revenue come in? Are there certain parts? Is it possibly your fiber optics business? Is it your security business? Where are you seeing the impact of this right now?
Well, the U.S. market is the largest market in the world and is showing resilience. So, these investments are occurring in all three of our businesses. First, our CSS business, it's fiber optic driven investments. It's data centers. In our utility and broadband business, it's utility, power generation, and grid modernization. And in our electrical business, it's overall electrification impacting parts of the economy as well as industrial. I think it's the start of an industrial super cycle back to the U.S., again, fueled by nearshoring, reshoring.
So, John, I do want to ask you, AI, we always hear that AI is going to be just this transformative force in every industry right now. Today, right now, how is AI impacting your business?
Huge impact, positive. First, our customers. We serve directly the tech companies that are building out data centers. The hyperscale data center builders are our direct customers. We serve 90% of the Fortune 100 companies directly. And we've got leading global solutions. So we're helping them build out those data centers. AI, more specifically Gen AI, is going to be an accelerant to growth of data centers as we look on out. It's also impacting our business. We're using increasing AI applications applied against our big data to run our business better.
All right. John Engel, CEO of Wesco. Great to have you here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank.
All right, coming up, going for a clean shave. Wall Street looking to drop its 5 o'clock shadow with a hot new IPO, reportedly getting banks on board for a debut. And if you haven't already, follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. It is right around 5:30 a.m. in the New York City area, and there's a lot more ahead here on Worldwide Exchange. Here's what's still on deck. The records, they just keep coming. The S&P hitting yet another all-time high. Futures looking to build on that momentum. Key to the market action today, the monthly jobs report, as Fed Chairman Jerome Powell offers new signals the Fed may be moving closer to cutting rates. And ahead of that data, President Biden touting his administration's economic accomplishments while also addressing a difficult relationship with China in his State of the Union address. It is Friday, March the 8th. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Collins. Get you ready for the trading day ahead. We're going to pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures with the S&P coming off another record close. Take a look. Looks like the S&P will open up higher once again. Right now in the pre-market, shares moving fractionally higher. The Dow looks like it would open up almost 40 points higher. The Nasdaq easing a bit back off of its highs of earlier this morning. Checking the pre-market gainers on the S&P after yesterday's close. Take a look. NVIDIA right there at the top of the list. Shares up 3%. Another chip maker, Intel, in there as well. And Alexandria Real Estate in the number two spot, up almost 3%. We also want to hit on Apple, dipping slightly yesterday, marking its seventh straight day of losses. So if you take out the pre-market action, the stock, as you can see right here, it's down nearly 6% over the last week, year to date down almost 12%. Fairleigh Strategies, Katie Stockton noting recently, if this stock, if it breaks below the $170 support level, it would likely be a longer term setback for shares. You can see right now, Apple is just a few cents below that level right now in the pre-market. We'll have to continue to watch it. All right. We are also watching the bond market this morning with yields at their lowest level in 3 weeks. Take a look. The benchmark right now, the 10-year, coming in at 4.07%, down about 15 basis points over the last week. Similar story for the long bond, often seen as a read on inflation expectations. Okay. That's your morning money set up now. We want to turn to a big report coming out later today. That's the jobs report out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. Economists expecting hiring to have slowed last month, with non-farm payrolls likely to come in at 198,000 compared to 353,000 in January. The unemployment rate expected to hold steady at 3.7%. Key for Wall Street. This is the final jobs report before the Fed's next policy decision later this month. A hotter-than-expected reading could help the central bank's case for pushing off its first interest rate cut in years to sometime in the late summer, maybe even the fall. Here's Fed Chairman Jay Powell speaking to the Senate on that topic yesterday.
What we expect and what we're seeing is continued strong growth, a strong labor market, and continuing progress in bringing inflation down. If that happens, if the economy evolves over that that path, then we do think that the process of carefully removing the restrictive stance of policy will begin over the course of this year.
Joining me now with our outlook is Stifel Managing Director and Chief Economist Lindsay Piegza. Lindsay, good morning. Great to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right. So I already asked another guest earlier. I got to ask you, are we in a situation where good news is bad news if this jobs report comes in higher than expected? Do you think that's going to give the market some concern about these cuts?
Well, I think even if the report doesn't come in hotter than expected, if it comes in on consensus, I think that still perpetuates the notion of a solid labor market and gives the Fed plenty of cover to remain on the sideline as it waits to see further improvement in the inflation data. Remember, the market consensus right now is for about a 200,000 rise. Nominally, that's still very strong. While it is a loss of momentum, no doubt, from that earlier outsized increase at the start of the year, again, even at 200,000, that would leave the moving average closer to 300,000. So very much in line with Chair Powell's notion that we are seeing a tight labor market and they can take a very patient approach to rate reductions.
Okay, so we're seeing a tight labor market. But we're also seeing rising wages. We're just showing the audience the forecast for this report is about a 4.4% increase in wages. Powell also made it clear they don't need to see inflation all the way down at 2%. They just need to see more reports where the trend continues. So rising wages, the right trend on inflation, do you believe that would not only give investors confidence, but the Fed confidence to make these cuts possibly in June?
It absolutely could, but unfortunately, I don't think that's what we're going to see. If you look at some of the latest inflation data, not only are we more bouncing along as opposed to seeing this clear disinflationary trend, but we actually saw an acceleration at the start of the year. Wages also ticking up in that early January report. Now, we are expected to see some reprieve on a monthly basis, but wages are expected to remain well above 4% on an annual basis, which perpetuates, again, this notion of sticky inflation and fails to give the Fed the confidence that they're looking for that we are on this a sustainable downward disinflationary trend back to 2%. Now, to your point, the Fed doesn't need to see inflation reach 2% before initiating rate reductions, but they do want to make sure that the momentum is very clearly established to the downside, and the latest data simply does not support that.
All right, Lindsay, as we mentioned earlier on the show, today is International Women's Day. One data point we're going to be looking in this report for is the employment of women, specifically women ages of 25 to 54. Right now, it's hit recently, as of the last report, hit a new high, bolstered in part by the shift to remote work and flexible hours. What does that say to you about this economy that we're seeing more and more women back in the workplace?
Well, I think, again, this perpetuates the notion that the labor market is seeing improved conditions. It's not only pulling workers from the sideline, but it is pulling women specifically from the sideline that were previously unable to participate because of elder care, child care, or other issues. And so we're continuing to see businesses increase the incentive for workers to move back into the labor market. And I think this is a net positive, particularly when we talk about reshaping that participation rate back to the pre-pandemic level, which could help continue to create a more sustainable level of growth in the underlying labor market to continue to perpetuate this recovery in the U.S. economy.
All right, Lindsay Piegzer, great to see you as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, switching gears just a bit. The Fed's not only looking at today's jobs report when it comes to interest rates, inflation, the consumer sentiment. They're also top of mind as in retailers, they close out another busy week of earnings. New data from MasterCard this morning showing spending, it just continues to be resilient following a solid holiday season. Joining me now in a first on CNBC interview with Steve Sadoff, senior advisor at MasterCard, also former CEO of Saks. Steve, good morning. It's good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. How are you doing?
All right. So thank you for bringing this report to us here on CNBC first. I'm just looking at the numbers. And I do have to say, I was a bit taken aback here. I mean, we're seeing stronger growth than we saw during the holiday season. Online sales up 9%, but purchases online of clothing up 14%, outpacing the broader number. What does that say that clothing sales are up 14%?
Well, it says that the consumer is out shopping. They want newness. And apparel, they were cooped up in January. We had some tough weather in January. They want some spring clothing, and they're buying in-store and online. I think you look at the 2% growth in in-store retail, that's very healthy, and the 9% growth online, very strong. Apparel, quite good. Restaurants, quite strong. So what it's saying is you came out of the fourth quarter earnings season, as you said, with the consumer shopping. Earnings were relatively healthy, most of the companies beating expectations. And this is now the first month of the first quarter of this year, 24 fiscal year. And overall, you're seeing consumers still shopping.
So Steve, you said that 2% of in-store shopping is healthy. I did want to ask you about this. I want to lean on your experience as formerly being the CEO of Saks. mall-based retailers, they had a pretty tough quarter overall. I'm looking at Nordstrom, I'm looking at Foot Locker, I'm looking at Macy's closing 150 stores. The fact that we only saw 2% growth in store, what does that mean about the future of what used to be an American staple, the mall?
You know, I think, and again, now I'm talking about my own perspective. This isn't a MasterCard numbers or thoughts. I think that the middle of the market where some of the department stores are sitting are having to remake and reinvent themselves. They're looking at different ways, whether it's different formats, different types of relationships with the vendors, such as concessions. They really have to change their game and up the game. The value players are doing exceptionally well. Those are the other number of brands that fit within that. And examples would be things like the TJX, Ross Burlington,
okay,
are all performing very well. But the department stores have had a tougher game. And I think that you're seeing changes that are going on. A number of the brands in the middle, the department stores, are being quite creative in what they're doing. But I think that change is what they need to be doing.
All right, I want to come back to the report. Restaurant sales, they were up 6% year over year. Part of that's Valentine's Day. It's obviously a big boost for restaurant sales. But over the last couple of months, we've seen more people go towards experience as opposed to physical things. Where is the consumer at right now? We've heard the consumer stretched. Credit cards are at historic highs, not only the rates, but the amount owed. Where do you see the consumer at, and how important is it for the consumer to see these rate cuts?
Well, I think that the consumer is stretched. Experiences, though, still matter. Remember, during the pandemic, people were stuck at home. They still are in the mode where they want to get out, they want to travel, where they have resources. The luxury consumer is very much still experiencing restaurants and traveling. You see it, try to get a restaurant reservation in New York City, still very tough. So I think the consumer is feeling a pinch, but it varies by segment of the consumer. The high-end consumer tied much more to the stock market, which is performing very well. The lower-end consumer, who's lost some of the support programs from the government, is very stretched.
Okay. Steve Sadoff from MasterCard. Great to have you here. Your latest report shows online sales up 9%, in-store shopping up 2%. Thank you again for being here. All right, we're going to turn our attention back to Washington, D.C. in last night's State of the Union address. President Biden laying out his plans to further reshape this country's tax system and tout his administration's economic accomplishments. The president reiterating his call for a so-called billionaire tax and also pledging to end tax breaks for executive pay above $1 million. Biden also using this speech to celebrate his administration's crackdown on junk fees while also walking a very fine line on growing competition with China.
I'm saving American families $20 billion a year with all the junk fees I'm eliminating. Folks at home, that's why the banks are so mad, is $20 billion in profit. I'm not stopping there. My administration has proposed rules to make cable, travel, utilities, and online ticket sellers tell you the total price up front so there are no surprises. I've made sure that the most advanced American technologies can't be used in China, not allowing to trade them there. Frankly, for all this tough talk on China, it never occurred to my predecessor to do any of that. I want competition with China, not conflict. And we're in a stronger position to win the conflict of the 21st century against China than anyone else for that matter.
And we'll talk more about how that State of the Union address might be seen by investors later in the show. Also coming up, a semi-slide this morning is shares of Marvell and Broadcom. They sell off. A look at those and your morning's other big money movers coming up next. But first, we've got a few of your top trending stories. We're going to start off with Netflix taking a big right hook into the live sports arena. The media giant will exclusively stream. I got to see this one. Mike Tyson and Jake Paul's head-to-head fight on July 20th in Dallas. Marking Mike Tyson's first fight since 2020. This is going to be amazing. All right, age proving to just be a number, at least for Rupert Murdoch. The 92-year-old billionaire is set to get married for a fifth time to 67-year-old Elena Zukova, who he met through his third wife, Wendy Deng. And it's not just President Biden making a State of the Union headlines. Former Republican Congressman George Santos announcing he's running for the House again just months after being expelled. Santos is only the sixth member of Congress ever to be dismissed. Worldwide Exchange, we're coming back after this. I just leave those two where they were. No comments on the list. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Let's get to some more of your big money movers. We're going to start off with shares of Gap. They're moving higher, up almost 7.5%. Earnings coming in better than expected, boosted by Old Navy's return to growth for the first time in more than a year. CEO Richard Dixon highlighted the company's gain in market share on Mad Money last night.
We exceeded expectations, both top line and bottom line. We gained market share, and all of this has been driven by the strength in our two largest brands. But the efforts that we're making in operational and financial rigor, that's what's showing up in the numbers.
Chipmaker Marvell falling on an underwhelming forecast. You can see shares are down about 6%. The chipmaker warning of weakness in carrier infrastructure and enterprise networking. Momentum in AI doing very little to prop up the stock as investors digest the likelihood of a revenue decline this quarter. Another chipmaker, Broadcom, also slumping. The semiconductor giant leaving its revenue outlook unchanged after posting mixed first quarter results. Its acquisition of VMware and strong demand for AI helping to grow revenue, but higher deal-related costs weighing overall on net income. Those shares down just about 2.5%. We also have a market flash now on a big story over these last few weeks, the mood on Wall Street around New York Community Bank. It appears to be improving. Moody's changing the direction of its rating view on the embattled lender to review for upgrade from review from downgrade. Taking a look at shares right now, they're up just over 2.5%. We're going to stick with the banks. This weekend, it marks the one-year anniversary of the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and the following shocks to the financial system and the broader markets. But the Biden administration is finding itself in a pretty tough position in its efforts to better regulate banks a year out from that crisis. Megan Casella joins us now with much more on this story. Megan, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. So that's right. The push to raise bank capital requirements, which is referred to as the Basel III endgame, has been both years in the making and one of the most concrete efforts to boost bank regulation since Silicon Valley Bank failed. But what our reporting shows now is that opposition to these proposals is on track to delay finalization by what analysts and lobbyists say could be at least another year, if not longer. Regulators are really left here with two tough options at the moment. Either they move forward with the rule as they have it with just modest changes and face near certain litigation from big banks, or they could withdraw and start over with a significantly revised proposal. Fed Chair Jerome Powell acknowledged for the first time this week that that's a real possibility.
I will say that we haven't made that decision, but if when we get to that point that turns out to be the appropriate thing, we won't hesitate to do it.
You won't rule that out. You would not rule that out at this stage of the game, reproposal.
Not at all. No, I think it's a very plausible option. It will depend on how things lie at the time when we reach that point.
The Bank Policy Institute, which has been leading opposition to the proposal, tells CNBC they believe it's necessary to restart the process given the amount of changes that would be needed to win industry support. Now, Frank, banks and Fed officials have both been careful to note that Basel has predated the SVB failure, and it was not meant as a direct response to last year's turmoil. But this episode still shows us just how difficult it's been for regulators to tighten rules surrounding the banks since that crisis. Frank?
So, Megan, this has already been a really big fight in the banking industry, but the Basel rules, they're not the only point of contention.
Absolutely not. This has actually sort of been a remarkably adversarial time for regulators versus the big banks. And there's all sorts of things that they're fighting about. The Fed and other regulators are working on some rules specifically in response to the SVB failure surrounding liquidity and trying to make it easier or more likely that banks use the Fed's discount window. But banks and lobbyists are really gearing up for a fight there as well, even though we haven't seen those specific rules yet. We expect to see them in a few months. And I will say, one analyst told me that while banks have so far refrained from suing their prudential regulators, we do think, they think at least, that this time could be different.
All right, I'm Megan Casella live in D.C. Megan, great to see you as always. All right, coming up, we got the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus the tech stocks our next guest says could provide some opportunity outside of the Mag 7. And if you haven't already, follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with shares of Rivian. They're looking to extend yesterday's more than 13% gain. The company says it is pausing construction on building a new factory in Georgia, and instead, it plans to build its new, less expensive SUV at an existing plant in Illinois. See those shares, they're up about 2.5% in the pre-market. United Health Group Services, they're starting to come back online more than 2 weeks after a cyber attack at its Charge Healthcare subsidiary. company says parts of its network that handle payments and medical claims should also be back online later on this month. Federal regulators, they are investigating a United Airlines Boeing 737 MAX 8 flight last month that experienced, quote, stuck rudder pedals after it landed at Newark Liberty Airport. Fortunately, nobody was hurt. Bloomberg reporting China is working to raise more than $27 billion for its largest chip fund to date. The report says the move would aim to accelerate the development of cutting-edge technologies to counter U.S. chip curbs. Also, razor maker and personal care product maker Harry's is reportedly making moves for a U.S. IPO. That's according to Reuters. The company is tapping Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Barclays, and Wells Fargo to prepare for that debut. The company was last valued at $1.7 billion back in 2021. And shares of Novo Nordisk are looking to push deeper into record territory this morning, one day after surpassing Tesla when it comes to market value. This after announcing positive early trial data for a new obesity drug. Shares of Novo are actually falling a bit right now in the pre-market, up over 30% over the last, or excuse me, year to date. You're going to hear more about it from Novo's CEO on Money Movers. That's coming up today at 11 a.m. Eastern time. All right, here's what to watch today at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. It is the big market event of this week, the release of the February jobs report. We also get some fresh Fed speak when New York Central Bank President John Williams delivers comments in the 7 o'clock hour. All right. The jobs report said to be the key catalyst for the markets as we prepare to close out what's been just kind of a whipsaw week for stocks. Take a look at futures right now. You can see they are in the green across the board. Looks like the Dow would open up about 20 points higher. The Nasdaq off of its highs of earlier today. For more, let's bring in Tiffany McGee, CEO and CIO at Pivotal Advisors. She's also a CNBC contributor. Tiffany, good morning. It's great to see you.
Good morning, Frank.
All right, it's been a wild week. We had Jay Powell on the Hill. We had the jobs report. We had the State of the Union address. A lot of things for investors to consider. Also, the S&P hitting a new record. What do you see happening today? What's your WEX word of the day?
So my WEX word of the day is indifferent. You know, there was lots of chatter yesterday all over CNBC and other news networks about the State of the Union. And I really don't think that the market is going to move based on State of the Union address. It was a very spirited address. There's still lots of talk about it. But I really don't think that we're going to see any permanent movement around the election until closer to November.
Indifferent? Wow. I wasn't expecting that one. Just not worried about it either way.
Well, listen, I think that there are other headlines on the docket for today. The jobs report we've been talking about all morning. And I think that that is already, listen, you were talking about it earlier. It's moving futures markets. It's going to be moving the market today over the State of the Union.
All right. So right now you're kind of looking at what moves you want to make going into March. We got some guidance from Jay Powell. The cuts, they're coming. It's just not clear when. So how are you moving portfolios? What are you looking at right now? What considerations do you have?
Well, listen, I think we can look at what's been going on for the past few months. Listen, like the fourth quarter earnings season has really been strong. So it's really good evidence that that should really support stocks moving forward. When we look at the Magnificent Seven, as we've been talking about for, you know, weeks now, you know, a lot of those stocks, you know, a few of those stocks are not really doing well. So we look at like Tesla, Apple, Google, all down. That may be a sign that leadership is broadening. So maybe an opportunity for investors to kind of diversify their equity portfolio. So I'm looking at that. And then, of course, you've also been talking about bonds today. It might be an opportunity, a good entry point for investors to look at longer duration bonds with the yield news.
OK, so you're looking to broaden out your portfolio in general, your clients' portfolios. But your picks for us are solidly in the tech space. One of them is Broadcom. I had earnings last night. The other one, also a chip maker. Why buy these now? Chips are trading pretty close to all-time highs, you know, minus these earnings. But the SMH ETF, I mean, generally, chips have just been moving higher all year long. Why buy in now?
Listen, I think you have to be in these stocks. And I like the idea of diversifying, right? I like the idea of not putting all your baskets, putting all your money in NVIDIA. And so Micron and Broadcom, as I sent you, are really good ways to play the chip market. When we look at Micron, you know, it really it's been underperforming its peers. It's a good buying opportunity. It's the third largest supplier of DRAM chips, has 23% of the market share, fifth largest supplier of NAND chips, 11% of the market share, and it's almost about year-to-date 16%. In contrast to a company like NVIDIA, which is really kind of skyrocketing. So a little bit of a sale. comparatively speaking. Then when we moved to Broadcom, yes, you mentioned that they dropped earnings last night. And here's the big thing. They beat, right? They had a great earnings report, but yet the stock was down. And I think, number one, we've kind of been, investors have been kind of used to this kind of like NVIDIA-like news where the company's guidance is really much higher. And so guidance was in line with the street, but maybe, you know, we're just a little bit used to higher guidance. And so that was reflected in the movement of the stock. So I think this is a really good buying opportunity.
All right. So I want to go back to your other theme, the broadening out of the market. There was a note yesterday. Somebody referenced Madonna saying it was a material world. Materials, the best performing sector over the last month. Is that one of the sectors you would put money into as you look at the broadening? Or is there one in particular or a couple in particular that you're eyeing?
Say that again.
I said, would you put money into materials right now? Or is there a different sector that you're eyeing right now as you look at that broadening?
So listen, when I'm talking about the broadening, I'm not just talking about the sector. And yes, performance is actually like broadening across sectors. But I'm really talking about diversifying outside of these really, really big name stocks. So okay. Healthcare, you know, I've talked about that in the show. I love these the promise of these and the delivery of these GLP-1 drugs. So I think that that healthcare is another sector that I'd be looking at as well.
All right. Another sector to watch right there. Tiffany McGee, great to see you as always. All right. That's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for watching. We got Squawk Box coming up next. Have a great weekend. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.